Chapter 4. Derek nods, finds some mist paint on one of his knuckles, and then wipes it off on Styles' nose. Styles makes a face at him. Derek makes a face right back before heading into the living room to find his sister whole and still pissed off. The others look up as he comes in, and they seem to have come to a tacit agreement that they'll take it easy on him. "Hey, Dare, there's chicken souvlaki and that lemon soup you like," Isaac calls over to him.
"It's called avgalimono,"
Lydia says archly. "Thanks," Derek calls back. He's not up to mustering any sort of happy expression yet, though. He looks at Lydia with honest curiosity. "Do you speak Greek?"
"I'm not fluent," Lydia says, "but I could handle a weekend in Greece if I needed to."
Trying to be polite, Boyd says, "Cora, do you like Greek food?" Cora shrugs and says in a neutral tone, "I'll eat just about anything." Derek nods to Lydia's reply, and then glances over at his sister. He's sure that she means it, aside from the cookies which she hasn't touched. Someone on the move and underage wouldn't have the luxury of being picky about sustenance. "Cora, come on. You can help me check the house's security before we eat." He thinks going about it that way will sound a lot better than, "Let me show you how safe we are." Cora nods and immediately gets to her feet. Allison opens her mouth to mention that she and Danny had already done that, then sees the look of something like relief on Cora's face, and keeps her mouth shut. "I saw the fences on my way in," she says, a little abruptly, but at least initiating conversation. "Holes for the wildlife. That's nice, I guess, but it's a vulnerability that isn't necessary." "You remember that we're in the middle of the preserve, right?" Derek asks, but he makes sure that his tone isn't mean. She seems to have forgotten a lot. "The wildlife is important. Most of the locals know that the posted signs mean business." He leads her out the back door. "I can and do have people arrested for trespassing. But really, it's just a warning that no one's going to listen if you whine about having seen something weird, because I'll just ask what you were doing on my land." They head across the yard, and he leans over to scoop up a stick as he goes. "The house defenses are about 10 steps above those." "I waltzed in easily enough," Cora points out. Derek waves for her to follow him to a break in the screen of trees, and throws the stick through it, against the fence. Of course, it bounces back in a shower of sparks. "That's because we leave this off during the day when the pack is coming and going and there's no trouble. It'll stay on for now, until this mess is taken care of." For the first time since she arrived, something like approval shows on Cora's face. She nods a little. "That's a good start, I guess," she says. Derek takes her around the perimeter and shows her the traps and other nasty surprises. "We also have video surveillance. Here's the power box to the fence," he adds, pointing to the fuse box set temptingly visible near the front gate. Cora's face twists. "Ugh, for a minute I was actually a little bit impressed. But come on, putting it right there is..." She walks forward as she's talking, then stops abruptly when she sets her left foot down and feels the slight give in the ground below her. "Holy shit!" Derek pulls out his phone and flips through the photos until he comes up against the one of Jake's parents in the pit. Once Cora is back on solid ground, he hands it to her. "Deep enough to hold werewolves, or two people standing on each other's shoulders. We also have a cell phone jammer to keep people from calling for help." "Couldn't you get in trouble for that?" she asks, frowning slightly. "I mean, unless you killed them, you'd have to let them out eventually. What if they went to the police?" "Well, most people that are going to go to these lengths are hunters, like these two assholes," Derek says, taking his phone back. "And they usually don't want the police involved. If it's just the average idiot, we can let them go and they don't have any right to complain. We have a right to the hole in the ground, and they don't have a right to be on our property. And the law in this country looks favorably on us."
"Favorably how?" Cora asks,
wrinkling her forehead. Stiles is the sheriff's son. Plus, the DA really likes Stiles and Sheriff Stilinski because they helped out his son Jackson once, when the guy didn't really deserve it, and it probably saved Jackson's life. Some of the tension is leaving Cora's shoulders. Okay, well, that's good. She suddenly looks exhausted and rubs the back of her hand over her eyes. Derek tactfully doesn't mention it. Dinner? He asks. Yeah, she says. As they start back towards the house, she says, So, how do you get all this set up? Derek thinks fast to come up with a way to explain Chris Argent in a Cora-friendly manner. Stiles designed most of it, then had help with the details and actual construction with a guy that does consulting for police and weapons and security. Which is actually true. That is Chris's legitimate business. He also put electric fencing up around the old house for me. A lot of the locals used to go there to try to... I don't even know. It's a spooky old house, I guess. He waves this aside. Anyway, it was really bothering me, so... Fence. No gate. You have to be a wolf to get over it without real effort, even if it's off. Cora nods a little and jams her hands into her pockets. I'm surprised he cared, she says. About the old house, I mean. He cares because I care, Derek says, despite the fact that he has already said so. The new den was my idea. If I hadn't been ready to rebuild, it wouldn't be here. Her face tightens again. Why did you even leave the old one at all? I would have bulldozed it. Derek's eyes shift away from hers. Yeah, well, I'm not ready yet. Cora looks away. I'm glad you didn't. I'm glad I saw it. She folds her arms over her stomach, then pushes her way back into the house without waiting to hear him reply. There isn't a lot Derek can say to it, so he just follows her back in. While they've been outside, the others have moved chairs around and gotten everything set up in the dining room, which is the second largest room in the house. They have more than enough chairs, because there are spares for the times that Sheriff Stilinski or Melissa are over to eat, or sometimes Boyd's family, now that they know about the werewolf thing. There are stacks of plastic plates and cups full of silverware, plastic cups and several bottles of soda, water, and iced tea. The food is laid out, but nobody has served themselves yet. They're obviously waiting for Derek and his sister to return. Derek leads her into the room and directs her to a chair before taking his own, which puts him between her and Stiles. She didn't fall into the pit. It was close, though. She has really good balance. Allison smirks and almost says something about how her father is still ashamed of being related to Henry, but remembers at the last minute that they're not supposed to talk about the Argent stuff. Stiles is just laughing. Don't put in a tiger pit, Stiles, he says. No one's gonna fall for that, Stiles. Best week ever, Erica says, then frowns as she stabs at a piece of gyro meat. Aside from, you know, the abduction and torture and shit. Ian still sends postcards, you know, Derek says, as he pries the lid off his soup and reaches for a spoon. The last one was from somewhere in South America. Argentina, Stiles says, his mouth already full. I still can't believe that you made friends with a monster that tried to kill you, Lydia says, rolling her eyes. Seriously, we leave you alone for 1 week. Spanakopita? She asks, holding a styrofoam container up to Cora. She takes it somewhat awkwardly, but starts dishing herself some food. He did beat the crap out of him first, Derek says, and I think it was more of a truce. But clearly, Ian's weird. That's one way to put it, Scott mutters darkly. Max shakes her head and looks at Stiles. I'm not sorry that was before my time, but geez, you do have a habit of turning enemies into friends, don't you? I mean, Justin, Ian, even me. You weren't an enemy, Danny says quickly, reaching out to squeeze her hand. You were just a puppet. She squeezes back, but rolls her eyes and says, "Yes, but I was a murderous lizard monster puppet." "With paralytic venom," Allison adds cheerfully. "Hey, I think that, given that only two of us ended up paralyzed, that's a pretty good ratio," Styles says, grabbing for the platter of dolmades. The plate gets passed down the line, and Derek snags two on its way by. "By ratio, I guess our injury rate is pretty low." He reaches for the chicken souvlaki, but holds it out to Cora before serving himself. She grabs two of the shish kebabs, and then reaches for the bowl of Greek potatoes. Her mouth is already full of spinach and feta. She's eating like she hasn't seen food in a week. Of course, it's possible she hasn't. Though it makes her earlier refusal to eat the cookies a level of spite previously not seen in the pack. She's also pretending not to listen to their conversation. But when Isaac says, "I guess it's probably Sebastian Stone that did the most actual damage to us, right?" she chokes on a mouth of spanakopita and blurts out, "You guys tangled with Sebastian Stone?" When Derek sees the way she's packing away the food, he starts casually reaching for the dishes with a higher meat content, knowing that will satisfy her and stick with her longer. Sometimes he holds it for her to take some before or after him, not saying a word about it. No matter how bitchy she's being, he finds it's still an instinct to try to take care of her. "He thought Styles would be fun to play with, match wits with or something." Derek's tone is more disgusted than anything else. "And you're still alive?" Cora says, staring at Styles. Styles looks down, then puts two fingers on his neck as if to check his own pulse. "So it would seem," he says brightly. "What do you want to drink?" She looks at him suspiciously. "Water," she says, and he hands over the pitcher without a word. Derek wonders if he should point out that Stone isn't. He gets that Styles doesn't want to seem like he's bragging, doesn't want to lay it on Cora too thick. Before he has to decide, Scott says, "I'm not normally the kind of person to say this sort of thing, but I'm glad Stone's gone. He was just..." Scott's voice trails off and he shakes his head. "He was one scary-ass motherfucker," Boyd concludes. That language coming from the normally mellow teenager startles a laugh out of most of them. "I don't think you ever told me what happened to him," Max says, although this is a blatant lie. "Beyond that, he's dead. You can't just kill a sorcerer, can you?" Styles shakes his head and says, "No, in the end, I had to reflect one of his spells back at him. That took him down long enough to, deal with him in a more traditional manner." "He wanted to be Moriarty to Styles Sherlock," Derek tells Cora. "Apparently he wasn't bright enough to remember that Moriarty was the one who didn't survive." "Technically," Styles says, "in the original novella, neither of them survived. Sir Conan Doyle intended for Sherlock to die at the same time, but there was this huge public uproar, so he resurrected him. And I sound like a gigantic dork right now, don't I?" "We're used to it," Scott says cheerfully. "I like the new ending better," Derek says, "and I've read the original stories." Lydia pins him down with a look. "Sacrilege," she says. "I don't care what ending they do, as long as they keep casting super hot guys in the role," Erica says, with her usual sharp-toothed smile. Derek gives Lydia the finger. "I like happy endings. Sue me." "It wasn't a happy ending for Doyle, who was sick of writing the character," Lydia replies. "Children," Boyd says mildly, "mind your manners. We have company, remember?" He looks at Cora and says seriously, "They're always like this." Cora's too busy chewing to bother with a reply. Derek gives Boyd a narrow-eyed look. "He could have just given Holmes an early retirement." Every time Cora's plate starts to get low, he just passes another dish to her. He isn't even being picky anymore. It's starting to remind him of Erica when she first got the bite. Styles is watching this too, with a faint little frown on his face. his working something out expression. So clearly he's wondering if Cora has been recently wounded or just hasn't eaten well in a long time. "I can't believe you're seriously arguing about this," Cora says, with a hint of that judgmental condescension in her voice. Her tone ruffles everyone's feathers, but they remember Styles' advice. And after a moment, Allison says brightly, "Me neither. They're such dorks. They can argue about anything, seriously." "It's not arguing," Lydia says. "It's debating. How many times must I explain that to you people?"
"Once more, apparently,"
Derek states, in a way that suggests he's suffering greatly. Cora sets her fork down with a click, shifting uncomfortably in her seat. The general camaraderie seems to make her squirm. She turns to address Styles in a tone that's a challenge. "How do you even turn people if you're not a wolf?" Styles, whose mouth is full of potatoes, just points to Derek. He takes that as a cue to explain.
"I can't turn people on my own, but Styles can share power with me. Channel it, I guess, and then we can turn someone."
"So you're not really an alpha," Cora says to him. Several pack members bristle, but Styles just shrugs. "I guess you could look at it that way." Derek rolls his eyes. Cora glowers at him.
"If we're going to be technical," Lydia says, because Lydia is always technical, "I think all that means is that Styles isn't an alpha werewolf. It doesn't mean he's not an alpha."
Cora narrows her eyes at Lydia. "That doesn't even make any sense."
"And yet, here we are."
"We're werewolves," Scott says. "How much sense does it have to make?" he adds, but he's careful to keep his tone curious rather than challenging.
"Well, we are pretty weird for a werewolf pack," Styles says. "I mean, definitely nobody's ever made any bones about that. And I guess it probably seems even weirder to someone like Cora, who grew up with werewolves themselves being normal. Like, to us, everything is weird. To her, the only weird thing is us."
He laughs a little and shoves what's left of the souvlaki over to her.
"This isn't funny," she snaps at him.
"Well, no," Styles agrees, "but sometimes you've got to laugh or go insane." Isaac speaks to Cora for the first time since they sat down together.
"And with all the other problems we have, we don't need to be insane."
"Yeah," Cora says, voice brimming with sarcasm. "I'm sure you guys fight off rival packs all the time."
"And fairies," Allison says.
"Sorcerers and their pet lizards," Erica says, and Danny shudders.
"That troll underneath the Water Street Bridge," Boyd says.
"Twice," Scott chimes in.
"That asshole came back?" Allison asks, arching an eyebrow.
"Yeah, you were, out of town," Scott says. "We handled it, no worries."
"Let's not forget the sorcerer werewolf," Lydia adds, "who ruined my manicure."
"And made fun of me," Max says.
"And dislocated my shoulder," Allison says, and huffs. "We taught him a lesson, though, so it's okay."
Cora's glaring at all of them, and after a moment of deliberation, she says, "Pass the grape leaves." Derek passes them without a word. Styles decides to change the subject and brings up something innocuous, and before much longer, the food on the table has been demolished. Everyone is still somewhat tense, so Styles says, "How about a movie?" Most people seem agreeable to this, or just don't have an opinion.
"Preferences?"
Derek asks. "And no ponies," he adds to Erica. Erica makes a face at him. Scott says, "Brainless," at the same time that Allison says, "Action," both of them trying to think of something that won't offend Cora and won't upset her.
"Cars or martial arts?"
Isaac asks.
"Put on that terrible movie with skateboard guy as a spy," Boyd says.
"Oh yeah, Vin Diesel. Yes, please." Danny says with emphasis. I could get behind that. Or on top of it, Erica states. Who's on cleanup duty? Mac asks. Isaac and Scott, Styles replies. I'll help out. I've seen that movie a zillion times. No, you go with the others. Sofa, Scott says, frowning at him. He clearly thinks that Styles has been exerting himself too much. Styles rolls his eyes. Fine, mother hen. Scott just gives him a look. And when they get to the living room, they make sure to leave space open at the end of the sofa for him. Derek settles in front of him on the floor and tugs Cora down to sit next to him. She huffs a little and looks at the window several times, but settles. Seeing her nervousness, Boyd goes over and pulls the blinds down. That makes her relax a little more. By the time the movie has actually started, she's starting to blink more slowly. 5 minutes later, she's sound asleep, like she hasn't slept in weeks, her head slumped against Derek's shoulder. Isaac comes in, after loading the dishwasher, and hands them a blanket. Derek nods his thanks and settles it over his sister, who stirs but doesn't wake. There's some quiet conferencing while the movie plays. Styles wants to stay downstairs with Derek, but he knows he'll wake up sore and stiff if he sleeps on the sofa or the floor. Bed. Doctor's orders, Scott reminds him, and he sighs but agrees. In the end, Erica, Boyd, and Isaac decide to stay downstairs with Derek and Cora so they can more easily coordinate Cora watch. Everyone else goes up to the bedroom. Styles hasn't slept without Derek at his side since he'd been shot, so he sleeps restlessly, even with Scott sprawled on one side and Lydia's strawberry blonde chin resting on his chest. She wakes him up twice when he starts making noise in his sleep, interrupting both nightmares before they can really take hold. He's glad when he sees sunlight start to show around the curtains and heads downstairs to make breakfast. Erica is up, taking her shift while she reads a comic book. Hey, you, Styles says, dropping a kiss on the top of her head. Breakfast preferences? Yeah, make those bitchin' lemon muffins, she says. Styles nods. When Cora wakes up, will you loan her some clothes and let her use the shower if she wants? Erica makes a face. Okay. Styles heads into the kitchen and starts baking. The smell has everyone up before long, and it's the usual morning chaos of coordinating who takes showers in which order and in which bathroom. Cora rather grumpily accepts Erica's jeans and tank top and the use of their bathroom. By the time she's out, the muffins are ready and Styles has bacon cooking. He's made some extra, since Cora seems to be hungry. Since she's going to be pissed no matter what, he just flat out asks her, Are you recovering from an injury? What? Cora asks, scowling reflexively. Trying to be patient, Styles says, You're eating twice as much as a girl your size normally would. That's either because you've been suffering from long-term deprivation or because you're recovering from an injury. I would like to know which so I know what resources I have available and what resources I shouldn't push. Cora stares at him hard for a few minutes, but then huffs and says, I'm not injured. She doesn't offer any other explanation. Styles nods and gestures to the food despite that. Take as much as you need. I will, she says. Styles lets it go and pours her a mug of coffee. Breakfast passes quietly, except for some chatting. Boyd and Isaac are still asleep, since they had agreed to take shifts of Cora watch and didn't sleep as much as the others. Styles is restless, even jittery, tapping his spoon against the table repeatedly. Derek refills his coffee mug and then slides his fingers through Styles. Okay, he finally says. Information. Cora, if you've tangled with these alphas, why don't you tell us as much about them as you know? After a long moment, Cora huffs a sigh. There are six of them, all of them killers. The rumor is that each of them killed their entire pack and absorbed their power. Jesus, Scott says. Cora gives a little nod. I haven't met all of them. They can hide their presence. You could walk right past one without even knowing that he was a wolf, let alone an alpha. They're ruthless, particularly Deucalion. He would have to be in order to get the respect of the others. Jake starts taking notes on his tablet, and Allison looks keenly interested. Do you know how they move? I mean, do they tend to stay in motels, camp, drive cars, that sort of thing? Cora tucks her hair behind her ears. They're not the sort to camp. Deucalion, he would say he's a man of refined tastes. Her lip curls. Last time I ran into them, he'd gotten a penthouse apartment. They're not bothered by staying in cities the way some wolves are. I don't know how they travel, though. Sounds like a psycho, Allison says, but we can use that to find him if we need to. Yeah, Cora shrugs a little. I only met him a couple of times, and the last time was years ago, so I really don't know much about him, just that he's dangerous. Stiles nods. Allison, what have you got? So I talked to Dad, she says. He knows of Deucalion. He said that up until about 10 years ago, he was known as a decent alpha, kind of like us. They kept an eye on him, but never had reason to go after him. Until someone decided to go after him anyway, lured him into a discussion of peaceful terms, ambushed him, killed half his pack, and blinded him. Christ, Stiles says. Did your dad know who? Maybe we could track the guy down and give Deucalion his head and he'd calm the fuck down. Allison sighs and rakes a hand through her hair. Gerard. Oh, Stiles says. Well, that's out then. Allison nods. And I can confirm the rumor, at least about Deucalion. One of his betas thought he was unfit to be their alpha after that and tried to kill him. Deucalion killed him first, and then the rest of his pack. She grimaces a little and twirls her hair around her fingers. Uncle Julian thinks he's heard of them, came across them a while ago, and at first he thought it was Justin's pack, until he found out that an entire pack of betas that one of his guys had been keeping an eye on had been wiped out. It struck him as odd, because he hadn't had any trouble with those betas before. And then the alpha was just poof, gone. I guess Deucalion just roams around recruiting, and he doesn't seem to like taking no for an answer. Stiles nods and glances at Jake, who's still taking notes. Get the details of that pack. We can run it past our other contacts. Danny? Mac? Danny sighs. I've gotta have more than Deucalion to go on. You'd think it would be a rare name. Hell, it is a rare name. But there are still over 1,000 people in the U.S. who have it. About 1,500 to be precise. But there's nothing recent in this area connected by anyone with that name. Stiles makes a face. Cora, do you know any of their other names? He asks, but Cora's frowning at him. Who are all these people you're talking about? She asks warily. Who's keeping an eye on packs of betas? Allison looks at Stiles and gives him a tiny, oops, face. Stiles just shrugs in reply. They can't keep it from her forever. Derek just looks disgruntled for a few moments, but then decides to put it out there. There's no sense in making Stiles the bearer of what Cora will consider bad news. Hunters, he says, wondering if he can get away with that or whether he'll have to name names. What hunters? Cora asks, her voice thin and tight. We have a standing truce with the local hunters, Scott says, like Derek, hoping he can get away with being vague. Stiles blackmailed them into it a while back. The same local hunters who burned our family to death in their beds? Cora asks, her claws digging into the surface of the table. No. Derek replies sharply. She's dead. The local hunters who hadn't known she'd done that to us. She? Cora asks, tone incredulous. Like it was one person? Are you fucked in the head, Derek? Yes, as a matter of fact. Derek snarls. Yes, it was one person. Oh, she hired some fucking drunks and thugs to provide a bit of muscle.
And later I found out she paid off the fire inspector, but it was just one person.
Well, why don't you go back in time and tell the assholes who were chasing me through the forest that night that they were just drunk thugs?
Cora replies. Her voice is layered with sarcasm.
I'm sure they'd be happy to hear it.
Derek freezes. What? Jesus, Stiles says under his breath. Cora folds her arms over her chest, but looks away.
What hunters are you working with?
Stiles looks at Derek and says, Chris Argent. He wasn't involved in the fire. He didn't even live near here at the time. His sister did it without his knowledge. We've worked with him before, and he's good for it. The rest of them are people from not this area that we've connected with over the years. Derek is still staring at Cora. He looks like he's going to be sick. How did you... He stops to take a breath. How did you get out? Cora looks away.
They blocked off the tunnel out, she says. You knew that?
She asks, and he nods.
I guess I was just the fastest. I made it out before they closed it.
Derek nods once to show that he had heard, but rests his elbows against the table, pressing his face into his palms, thinking that maybe Peter hadn't gotten everyone after all. Stiles leans over and rubs his back with one hand, almost absently, thinking similar thoughts.
We are going to have to talk about this later, when the whole Deucalion thing is taken care of, he says to Cora. Any detail you can remember about those people might be helpful. If they're still out there, I want to find them.
Why? Cora retorts. What business is it of yours? Stiles has to take a deep breath and think hard about Gwen's advice before he replies.
Because, he says, drawing out the words, they hurt my Lupa, and I will destroy them.
Cora stares at him for a long moment before looking away and muttering, yeah, whatever.
I'll ask if Kate had anyone she worked with regularly, Allison says. Her voice is quiet, but her index finger is tapping against the table in a firm, angry pattern.
I'll take over when you're done, she adds, because this would be Hunter business.
From the look on her face, it's clear that she intends to bury these people.
Can we get back to what's important? Cora snaps.
Stiles opens his mouth, but just barely manages not to say what he's thinking, which is that Cora is the one who derailed them by asking for details about the hunters.
Okay, so I've got feelings out to Dr. Deaton, Dr. Mulrooney, Rebecca, and a few others, but I haven't heard back from them yet. In the meantime, Cora, it would be helpful to know how you heard they're coming after us.
Just a rumor, Cora says with a shrug.
Aw, sweetie, I know all about rumors, Lydia says, in that sweet tone that makes sane people cringe. Why don't you tell us the ones you heard?
Cora's eyes narrow, but then she gives him a dramatic roll, folding her arms over her chest like she doesn't have time for this. I was in Mexico. Monterrey. There's a pack down there that I've stayed with on and off. I've tried to keep track of Deucalion since we've bumped paths a couple of times. And I like to stay as far away as possible. The local pack down there said they'd heard he was heading to California. I asked if they knew why. And she said to deal with the new Alpha in Beacon Hills.
That sounds dire, Scott says, his forehead wrinkling.
I don't like deal with, Erica announces.
Do you know where they heard this rumor? Stiles asks.
Cora shakes her head.
She didn't say, and I didn't ask.
Scott is frowning.
Why does this dude even care about us?
How should I know? Cora asks. He just goes around making people's lives suck, as far as I can tell.
Well, that doesn't seem like a very effective life strategy, Max says, her tone perplexed.
Several people let out chuckles or snorts of laughter. Seeing the sour look on Cora's face, Stiles says,
simmer down now. We don't want Cora to think we're not taking this seriously.
You don't need to pander to me, Cora shoots back.
It's not my ass on the line. Max shrugs. We're not pandering. We just need to make jokes. It's a coping mechanism. Cope however you want, Cora says. You don't need to make excuses to me. But I don't know that I like the plan of just sitting around waiting to die. Styles rubs a hand over his face. What would you suggest? He asks, forcing politeness into his tone. We could try something really revolutionary and look for him, she says. Some solid surveillance wouldn't go amiss. Allison looks at Styles. We might be able to find out where he's holed up if he picked the high-class sort of place he usually likes. But that's a lot of prying. Styles taps his fingers against the table. I'll see if my dad can ask some discreet questions. And I'm still waiting to hear back from Deaton. You just know he's going to know something. Scott snorts. Obviously. Cora's voice is a little more hesitant. Deaton? She glances at Derek. Did we know him? Derek looks up and gives her a nod.
Yeah, Dr. Deaton. He always took care of us if we were hurt and gave us our shots. He runs the animal clinic.
He's not snapping now. His voice is more gentle, in response to her hesitation. After a long moment, Cora shakes her head. I don't remember. Derek turns to Scott. Do you have a picture?
Think so.
Scott pulls out his phone and starts sliding through his photos until he finds one of Dr. Deaton, who happens to be holding an extremely large, extremely disgruntled tabby cat. Scott smiles a little at the memory.
Yeah, okay. Here he is.
Derek takes the phone from Scott with a nod of thanks and holds it out so Cora can see Deaton.
Does that help?
She looks at the phone blankly for a minute.
I guess he looks kind of familiar, she finally says with a slight shrug.
Derek hands the phone back to Scott.
I can take you to meet him later, if you want. He shrugs. Besides knowing how to take care of us, he knows a lot about magic and a lot about everything.
Shit, can you say that again? Styles says, fumbling for his phone. I need it recorded for posterity. Deaton will never believe you said it otherwise. Derek flips him off. Cora just rolls her eyes. Jesus, you guys are a fucking circus, she says, and pushes back from the table. Derek watches her stomp off and then lets his head fall onto his arms.
Wow,
Styles says, mostly under his breath.
Wow.
I'm sorry. I've got nothing else.
Wow.